Hello and welcome. Thank you for joining us today. My name is Danny Carlson. I'm the National Association of Elementary School Principals, Associate Executive Director for Policy and Advocacy. We're really looking forward to today's discussion. We're excited to be partnering with Learning Heroes. And if you're not familiar with them, you'll have a chance to learn a little bit more about that organization in a minute, as well as the National PTA. We're excited to partner with these folks on today's webinar. A couple housekeeping items before we get started. First off, everyone is muted, so you aren't able to ask questions in sort of the normal way. But we do encourage you to use the chat box to submit questions throughout the presentation. We'll be monitoring this chat box for your questions and ensure that those questions get asked to our panelists. One quick thing, just make sure when you do submit your question that you select all panelists and attendees, and that ensures that we're able to see those questions. I also have with us today Dr. Earl Franks. He is NAESP's executive director. He leads our organization of more than 14,000 members strong. So Dr. Franks.
Thanks, Danny, and let me add my welcome to all of you for joining us today for this very informative webinar. I also am very appreciative to Learning Heroes and the National PTA for partnering with us, and really to Learning Heroes for spearheading this program, this project, and this very informative Principal's Guide to Leading in the Time of a Pandemic. And we know that it's a very difficult time for all school leaders, and we're just so happy to be a part of this project, and we look forward to the conversation today. Thank you again for being with us.
Yeah, thanks, Dr. Franks. Yeah, so just to sort of pick up on that theme, this is in terms of sort of the why of today's discussion as well as this guide, depending on the school, students may be attending school in person, participate in a hybrid model, or completely virtual. But no matter the learning model, strong partnerships with families are now more important than ever. And we know that it's critical for principals to help teachers make these positive personal connections with parents and guardians, especially during the uncertainty surrounding the changes this school year. So today's webinar, we're going to dive into some of those themes. As Dr. Franks mentioned, a sort of core part of this is this Principal's Guide to Leading in the Time of a Pandemic, which is effective family engagement strategies and resources. We're really excited. We released that last week, I guess it was, and it's on our website. We'll be sure that you have a link to that to learn more. Just a quick note on that. What I'm really excited about with this guide is that it is, they're concrete strategies. They are very, very specific turnkey things that you can really use. It's not sort of vague things like engage families and try to get them involved. It actually provides really concrete strategies to actually do this work. So really excited for all of that. But without further ado, let's introduce our panelists. Wendy Lopez is Vice President of Content and Partnerships at the nonprofit Learning Heroes and is a former elementary teacher. She has 20 years of experience in family engagement, education, and engagement and philanthropy, prior to Learning Heroes, she was at American Express Foundation, working on nonprofit leadership development. And prior to that, she was at Scholastic for nearly a decade working on family engagement. Ron Meir is a private consultant based in Iowa City, Iowa. Since 1993, he has worked with schools throughout the country to build partnerships with families that support student learning. Most recently, Ron was a senior vice president at Scholastic Education, where he led the family and community engagement division there, and on consulting and professional services business. So without further ado, Ron and Wendy.
And mostly thank you to you all for making the time, given everything that is on your plate. We are so excited to, as Danny said, roll up our sleeves and make this a conversation. And so in our short time together, we have three main goals. The first is just to lay some context and share what hopefully some actionable insights, so not heavy on the research, but some data that can hopefully inform and again set the context for this work. The second is really excited to share this new guide that Danny just mentioned. We really designed it with you in mind. Again, as he said, concrete strategies and tips. And we're going to cover just a handful of them. There's more in the guide, so we hope that you'll check it out after we send it today. And then lastly, and always most importantly, is to have time to hear your questions, ideas, and thoughts, and continue to learn together and hear how this might help and strengthen the great work that you're already doing. Slide. So just a bit about Learning Heroes. We are a small nonprofit organization, almost 6 years old, and we really serve as a research and development arm in the family engagement space. So we're not a big household name, but what we do is start everything we do by first listening deeply to parents. We have done an unprecedented amount over the past 5.5 years of what we call parent mindset research to understand parent needs, priorities, concerns, and opportunities to be able to collectively, communicate more effectively with families. So that has included over 15 national surveys, over 200 qualitative sessions. And during those focus groups that are all third party, we dig really deeply into language. What is the kind of education jargon, for example, that we sometimes use with good intentions, but might confuse parents because they're not educators. So we really break that down and invite you to check out our research page on our website at thealearninghero.org. We have some great roadmaps and just some really great, hopefully practical suggestions on how to break down education jargon for parents. All of it is always done through and shared through an asset-based lens. And while we care about all families, we care really deeply about reaching low-income families and parents of color. So we always do an oversample of Latino and African-American families to be able to segment out the data and really understand parents, again, priorities and needs. We then take this actionable insight, and as you'll see on the next slide, share it broadly with the field. And so we are really honored and humbled as a small organization to work with so many great organizations like NAACP and PTA and many others that work both directly with families and work with educators and leaders. And so we share insights, we problem solve together, we convene partners, and then it's really only when we see gaps in resources that we create new resources like the ones we're going to share today. And then they are always designed on the front end to be adapted and to be used in different contexts, local, in local contexts, I should say, and programs. Next slide. So, again, I mentioned that we're going to share just a bit of data and wanted to set the context by first engaging you all to reflect on the following question. What percentage of parents would you say believe their child is at or above grade level in reading and math? So you can think about this in one of two ways, either nationally or thinking about the parents that you serve in your schools. What would they say if you asked them, if you did a survey to see what percentage believe their child is at or above grade level in reading and math? I think we just opened the poll. We'll give it a couple of seconds. Very interesting. So I think we can close it. And what I see here is that the vast or almost the majority, so 44% said 65%, with then 28% saying 92%, and then the additional options. So 65% was the majority. And so if we could advance the next slide, would love to share. So at Learning Heroes, as I mentioned, we do an annual survey to really understand parents' needs and priorities. During the school closures, we actually moved the timing of our research. It's usually in the fall. We moved that to the spring to really want to understand how parents were experiencing the school closures and really learn from the experience with an eye toward the future and this fall. And what we found as we have been tracking this number over the past 5.5 years is the following. So the baseline of the question, of course, right, if you could click once for context, and we all know this, you all know this better than us or living and breathing it, is that nationally it's just over a third of our students that are achieving proficiency in math and reading. And for many of our families of color, that number is unfortunately even lower. So juxtaposition of that just over one third to 92% of families believe their child is at or above grade level. We've been tracking this number again over the past 5.5 years. And I think interesting and important to note is that that 92% is regardless of race, income, or education. So for us, this speaks to a really alarming disconnect between what parents see as what the perception is versus the reality. It also speaks to us as an opportunity that feels solvable. When we dug deeper into the data and wanting to understand why this disconnect was happening, what we quickly found, if you could click once, is that it's grades really sit at the heart of it. So parents report that their children are getting Bs, and they believe that those Bs are better equate grade level mastery. When we speak with teachers, and this won't surprise you, teachers are very quick to say parents rely too much on grades because they mean effort as much as they do mastery. So again, this to us speaks to an opportunity. And if you could advance the slide, to set additional context, three main highlights that we found in this year's annual study, again, done around the time of the school closures in April, is the first is that, and, you know, hopefully this is the silver lining in all of this, that despite all of these challenges for us living it as parents, parents are activated. They have rolled up their sleeves. They want to engage more deeply in their children's learning. They are showing up, as I'm sure we're all seeing already, differently this fall, expecting more of schools, but prepared and ready and wanting to know how to engage, even more so than they have in the past. The second is that parents still deserve an accurate picture. Again, I just shared that 92% stat with you, which for us speaks to an opportunity that we're going to dig into today. And then the third, and this is looking at our research over the past 5.5 years and a lot of the great family engagement research and frameworks that have been out there for many years, even pre-COVID, is that family engagement has always mattered. Parents have always been the experts of their children. But this really, what's the silver lining in this crisis is this is an opportunity for us to help parents and teachers redefine their relationships and really come together as allies. Next slide. So just to give a little bit of a concrete picture, as I mentioned, that parents are engaged and ready to roll up their sleeves, you'll see here, and this is from the spring research, way at the top, when we asked parents in terms of the likelihood of what they wanted to do in this school year, this fall, right at the top is they want a better understanding of what their child is expected to learn in this new year. For us, that is so fundamental to closing that disconnect. You'll see they want to find more time to talk to their children about their assignments. They also want to have a deeper relationship with parents. So this all, again, speaks to the opportunity. We leaned into this research and other research to create the guide, which is now my what I'm excited about, and that is to roll up our sleeves. Next slide, and get to take a bit of a sneak peek of this new family, principal's guide to leading in the time of a pandemic. As you'll see on the next slide, and as Danny mentioned, we came together with my great friend Ron from we worked together previously at Scholastic with NAESP and with PTA. This was designed to be really practical. There are some great hyperlinks and resources from not only us, but from PTA and others. So really invite you to check it out. And with that, I will pass it over to Ron, who's going to take us through some of the resources and some of the strategies from the guide.
Thanks, Wendy. I'm really happy to be here today talking with you all. I actually started working in schools in 1981, so I'm closing it on 40 years. And I'm supposed to be working a little bit less these days, but thanks to the pandemic, one of the things that has happened is we've discovered that schools need families now more than ever. Danny said it at the beginning. The pandemic has really just underscored that. And I know some of you are in online school only. Some of you are in hybrid. Some of you are in person. Some of you have been in person and gone back to hybrid. Lots and lots of change. And it's so important these days to communicate clear information to families about what's going on given the situation, as well as information about learning. And what we're finding, I'm working with schools all over the country, What we're finding is that in our haste as educators to get this information to families, we're overwhelming them. It's a lot of information, and in that information overload, families aren't actually getting as much of it as they need. As I share some of the ideas and suggestions from the guide with you, you can find more detail in the guide, but one thing I really wanted to stress is as you lead this effort in your schools, if you can use as few platforms as possible to communicate with families, if it's possible in your building, can you get all of the teachers to use the same app? So what do I mean by that? Well, I mean less is more. If you've got multiple teachers using the same platform, then I as a parent only have to learn to navigate one thing to get information about my child's learning. But it's particularly complicated if I have more than one child in the school system and the different teachers are all using different platforms. And then I have to look at Seesaw or Classroom Dojo or Google Classroom, and I have to master all of those to know what's going on. The more I have to do, the less I'm going to do. So we've been seeing a lot of success when schools are able to use one or very few platforms to start communicating information with families and to keep it as clear as possible. We are doing a lot of communicating in writing. We're posting a lot of things in social media. We're putting lots of information in print form or as PDFs on websites. And something that we've discovered is that, not surprisingly, a lot of folks aren't reading everything or they're not reading and understanding. And what we've been seeing some principals have really good success with is not using so much print but using video. I had a principal tell me the other day, in her opinion, the newsletter is dead, and I have to agree with that. I think now that it really is a time of video. And what we see, for example, is, you know, if I go on a website and I go to your school and I read, here are all the details about the return to school and how we're going to keep kids safe and how interested we are in kids' well-being. If I read that, it's very different than if I hear that. And when I hear a principal say that, I get the empathy, I get the caring, I get the concern, it's much easier for me to watch a video, and you can point families to these videos from all different places, from social media, from lots of platforms. And so if you can, try to commit information using videos, and you don't have to do this in a way you're going to win an award for cinematography. Just take your phone, your computer, and put a short video to share that information. Hearing the message has much more of an impact than reading the message. On the next slide, we're going to talk a little bit about some other ways to make it easy for families. Again, so much information to navigate. If you can sit with your team and think through what are the most important links that we could share with families that they could use to navigate what's going on now? Part of it is to know what's happening with how school's happening, but also then what do I do? Where do I look online to see, is my child attending? Are they doing the things they need to do? Are they turning in their assignments? How do I monitor their attendance? So get me those links, but don't forget that I may not know how to use them all. So if you can also provide links on how do I use Zoom like we're doing today? How do I use Google Meet or Microsoft Teams? Or is there an easy place where I can go to learn on my own when I forget? Where do I look in Google Classroom? So try to find those links and make them easy to find. I was on today with a school in Southern California, and they had this fantastic set of links that they sent me. But when I went to their website, I couldn't find them. You had to know where to go. So make it easy. When you have your next meeting with your staff, talk to them about the questions that they're hearing over and over from parents, the questions that they're getting in common. And make a list of those questions, create a frequently asked questions document, an FAQ, and post that for those commonly asked things so that you can point parents to that. They know where they can find that information that so many parents want, like what happens if my child gets sick, or what happens if a teacher gets sick, or are we having homecoming? When do sports start again? Is there a PTA meeting, et cetera? So brainstorm with your team, think about what those questions might be, and create an easy-to-find FAQ where parents can get the information they need easily, and that allows them, if they reach out to you, to ask more specific questions. On the next slide, you're going to see, this is my summation of the last 50 years of research on the impact of homeschool partnerships on student learning. I really think everything we know about these successful partnerships fits into three buckets. And these are the areas that you as leaders can support your teachers in having success with. The document that Learning Heroes has created has resources and links to things to help you in these three areas. But the first one is all about building trusting relationships with families and making that strong personal connection. The second big bucket is helping families understand how their child's performing. And Wendy gave you a little data to show why that's so important, because right now most families don't understand that. And the third thing is you not only have to give tools to families, but you have to teach families to use those. And on the next slide, we're going to dig into that first bucket a little bit more. Nothing is more important in this work in partnering with families than trust. When families trust us, we can draw upon that trust and ask them to partner with us. So you have to reach out and build these trusting connections in intentional ways, and you need to help all of your staff do this. An effective way to, you know, this is, again, we're in these unprecedented times, and while we can't see families face-to-face in person anymore, we have a lot of technology tools that help us, and folks are getting really good at this. So consider having your staff make welcoming calls in these first few weeks of schools. I've been working with some schools that are making virtual family visits using Zoom or Google Meet, where they can actually see the family face-to-face, see the kids, see the grandparents, and talk to them about, hey, welcome, your daughter's in my third grade class this year. I'm so glad to have her. Tell me, what are your hopes and dreams for her? What can you share with me so I can be her best teacher? And really make that human connection. I live in Iowa City, Iowa. We have some new neighbors who just moved in across the street into a house that's been empty for a while, and the grass is about 2 feet tall. And when you think about making these connections with families, think about a new neighbor. You know, as educators, we often get so excited that we have some of the family's attention that we rush to share all kinds of things about procedures and rules and stuff. So think about how you would treat a new neighbor. I'm not going to walk over to my neighbor and say, welcome to the neighborhood, cut your grass. If I do that, I'm never going to have that kind of connection I want. I got to work up to being able to walk over there and ask and say, hey, could you get your grass cut? So work with your staff to make these connections really personal. And then follow them up with good news, lots of good news. We want those first connections with families to be positive, so that when we do have to have a tougher conversation, the family knows we're interested in them, we care about their child, and we're reaching out to solve a problem because we have the child's best interest at heart. And it's really important in these times to have two-way communication. It just can't be us as educators giving everything out and telling families. We have to have a way for that information to come back and to create those feedback loops that help us understand, are you getting the information we're sending out? Does it make sense? Is it helpful? What else do you need as families to be successful? So this personal connection piece is absolutely essential, and it's the starting place. On the next slide, we'll talk about that second bucket. And a lot of teachers say, you know, we already share all this information with families. We have grades, we have report cards, we have conferences, we share reports from assessments. What I think that Learning Heroes data illustrates is that the way we share the information does not work for most families. Most families walk away thinking that their child is fine, that their child is at or above grade level. And we know that's not the case. And the reason this is a problem is if I as a parent think my child is fine, there's no sense of urgency for me to partner with you to do something to support my child's learning. So it's critical that we help families truly understand where is their child performing in relation to the standards. A litmus test you can use is if you as a principal just reached out to any parent randomly in your school and asked them, is your child at, above, or below grade level? They could tell you. And if they're below grade level and you ask them how far below, their description would be pretty accurate. If they have that understanding, then they're going to have a sense that, gosh, my child's in a place, I'd like them to be in a better place. And that's where we can approach them, especially when we have that good relationship, to say, all right, let's work together. Let's talk about what you can do at home to support your child's learning. So you really want to have this conversation where there is clear understanding. Yesterday I was on a webinar with some teachers from a middle school in North Carolina. And as we were talking about this very conversation, one of the teachers said, she said, you know, that's a tough conversation. It's hard. It makes me nervous. And I always feel the need to soft pedal the information. I don't want the parents to feel bad. Parents don't feel bad when they know where their child is. They often feel bad when they don't know and they find out later. So let's help them understand where their child's performing, and then it can lead us to that third conversation. And on the next slide, Wendy's going to introduce to you the Learning Heroes tool that they've shared in the chat box, and it's available on the NAESP website.
Yeah, and this is just to give you a brief visual. We created this parent-teacher planning tool not to give you another thing to do, but rather to really supplement and strengthen parent-teacher conferences, those existing touch points that you might have. It can be co-branded. It can be customized. So you'll see it's on our website as sort of a template example, but we'd be happy to work with you to co-brand it for you. It's three simple steps. Basically, the first one is sharing those beginning of year diagnostic or benchmark data in a way that is actionable and visual. Always starting through, again, a strength-based lens, sharing with the positive first, where your child is doing well, and then very concretely where they need more support. The second step is then inviting parents and students to share. For parents, what have they been observing over the past few months while their child's been learning at home? You know, if they're having some specific trouble with, you know, math homework or specific strategies, really inviting them in, and the same with the child. During that second step of reflections, we also have a series of prompts that is not just the academic, but the social emotional piece, that motivation piece that we know is so critical for students to really engage in learning. And then finally, the third step, which leads into what Ron's going to be talking about, is how does this all come together? We're not just sharing data for the sake of sharing data with parents. How do we come together around a shared understanding of student progress so that together we can create learning plans that are meaningful? And Ron's going to talk a little bit more about this. The other piece that we created, which to me is hopefully helpful whether you use our tool or not, is we've created a teacher discussion guide. Basically, we have taken the kinds of questions that we have heard from parents, including the hard ones, during our focus groups and our work with parents over the past several years, and we've created some prompts to help teachers navigate those hard conversations. You know, fielding questions like, well, why didn't I know my child was at grade level? You know, well, if they're getting B's and they, you know, aren't at proficiency on state tests, you know, why is there that gap? So navigating those questions is another part of the tool. Next slide. Another tool that we have created, again, leading into helping parents have different ways to see how their child is progressing. We've created the readiness check. We worked with leading experts in math and reading to create a game-like digital tool that parents can use on their phone. The child answers 3 to 5 questions in math and reading, and then the parent gets to see how their child has learned skills from last year that are critical for this year. So it's a great beginning of year resource to share with parents. And then at the end, I think the most helpful part of the tool is that it connects parents to skill-specific videos, activities, and more to support those very important grade-level skills at home. It, like everything that we create, is in English and in Spanish, and this tool in particular was designed to support ELL.
I mentioned that I see all of the homeschool partnership research fall into three big buckets. The first one is having that trusting relationship. The second one is helping families understand where their child is performing to create that sense of urgency. And the third one is helping families support learning at home. And Wendy just talked about co-creating a learning plan and connecting families with resources, and that's essential. If I have learned anything over the last 30 years, it's that this last piece, we need to think about this a little bit differently. So start by thinking about how good instruction happens in your schools. That, you know, when teachers are trying to move students to mastery, they model a new concept, but they really let they facilitate students practicing in groups many, many times, playing with the new information. And while they're practicing, the teachers are watching, they're observing, they're giving feedback, they're supporting. And eventually, after these multiple opportunities, students come to mastery and they're able to apply that concept out in the real world. So that's how young learners learn. That's also how old learners learn. That's how adults learn. You learn by doing. So we have to think about, how do we normally give resources to families? Giving resources to families might mean we give them some links, we send them a guide and say, here, do this. The way I want you to think about this is if that strategy would work to bring your students to mastery, then it's going to work for families. So if just handing your students a document to read would bring them to mastery, then you can do that. But we know it doesn't work. What we have to do is, in addition to providing the resources, to making those links, is to giving the adults in the home, those parents, those caregivers, the opportunity to rehearse with the tool so they become competent and confident. And once they've had those opportunities to rehearse and we help them feel confident, that's when they're going to use that tool, use that resource at home with their child, and that's when your staff are going to see the difference in their classroom. And there are a lot of ways to do this. You can make it, it doesn't have to be horrible and fun. You can make it, you can have a lot of schools use game nights where you can find some fun interactive games. But often what we see teachers do is we say, help families practice. So they give the game to the teacher and they say, the teacher, or they give it to the parent. The teacher says to the parent, go do that with your child. We want the parent to practice with other adults first, that rehearsal, so that they can do it effectively with their child. So don't just think the connection comes or the support comes by telling. We all know that telling isn't teaching. And one really good thing you can do as the building leader is to ensure that your staff give families as many opportunities to rehearse with these tools as possible. The more they rehearse, the more they're likely to take the action at home that's going to make a difference to student learning. And on the next slide, you're going to see that as building leaders, the way you can really support, really make this work is to prepare your staff and to support them as they partner with families. The picture on the next slide is probably the thing that I hear the most. If you can only do one thing for your team as you move forward to foster these partnerships, is give your team the gift of time. This takes time. It takes time to reach out to families. It takes time to make those welcoming calls, to make those virtual visits, to have those conversations where you share the benchmark data, to rehearse with families how to use these tools. So find time for your staff. Think about your staff meetings. Are there pieces of the staff meeting that you can communicate the information in writing and you can free up time for staff to actually do the work or to learn about how to do the work and to be prepared to do the work? So you hunt for every speck of time that you have. I'm working right now on a project with a district of 18,000 students where every school is having the teachers make virtual home visits, share assessment data, and try to help families rehearse with the tools that they provide. And the overwhelming piece of feedback we get is we need more time, we need more time. So find ways to give the gift of time. The other thing that you can do that is particularly helpful is, just as I said, you know, with student learning, we have students rehearse with the material, and they got to rehearse many times. I mean, I told you that we need to help families rehearse with the tool. Well, before you have the staff work with the families, give your staff time to rehearse. Let them practice. You as the leader, you can model. So for example, you could model, how do you make a friendly call home? And then your staff can practice this. The way we often do it is we put staff in triads. We have someone be the parent, someone be the teacher, and someone be an observer. And then we switch the roles. And we role play more than once. And the first role play is the easy one. So you call, and it's a typical parent. But the second role play is a parent maybe who's a little cranky or has an issue or a challenge. It's really important not just to practice the easy situations, but help your staff practice what it's going to be like when they encounter a bump or a roadblock so that when it really does happen, they're prepared. You could also model a data chat. What does it mean? What does it look like to share that assessment data in a way that families really understand? What does it look like to check for understanding? And then allow your staff to practice and do that. That's something new. My wife is a middle school teacher of many years, and one of the things she's always said is it's so much easier for her to interact with her students than it is to interact with their parents. She gets nervous. So this role play and preparation is something that's really, really helpful before you ask your teachers to take this step. And then the one thing I know is that we hear teachers say over and over, if they can have a video sample, if they can have a script to get them started, if they could have some sentence starters, if they could have some stems, just some tool to help them with those first few conversations to make those go successfully, it makes things work out so much better for you today. And I know we're going to have the opportunity to answer questions about everything we've shared and what's in the guide. And right now, Wendy's going to give you an opportunity to reflect on what we've been able to share with you so far today.
Yeah, thanks, Ron. So as we segue into questions, we wanted to just pose, and this is sort of a standard way to, end these kinds of sessions, but, thinking about family engagement, what you have done in the past, maybe some new strategies that you're using, given hybrid and virtual models. Many of us, I know, we're working in areas where schools are either transitioning from all virtual into hybrid or vice versa. So thinking about your family engagement approach and strategies, consider one thing that you might stop doing that you know in your heart isn't working, right? Consider one thing, perhaps an idea that we shared here today or an idea you might have thought of and wanted to try but haven't. So consider one thing that you will try, and then one thing that you know is working and that you'd like to keep doing and improve on. So maybe that's something that you have seen work with a particular teacher or grade that you want to really celebrate and consider amplifying. I think as Ron was talking about, teachers, one thing that we I think are really keen on helping to support is, both parents and teachers are truly heroes in this moment. They are going above and beyond and trying to figure out what is a really difficult situation. So how do we celebrate that, right? How do we, as Ron mentioned, use of videos? Or can you invite parents to share videos of their successes? Invite teachers perhaps to share in a celebratory way. Maybe there's like a badging kind of, a program to it. And these are some of the suggestions that we make in the guide, and some ideas that you might be doing, or things that you, again, sometimes I've seen, great family engagement strategies sometimes take hold with one teacher in a building. And then it catches on, or with a parent, right? I'm a big believer in parent leader programs, and that peer to peer. So again, just three things to consider: one thing you'll stop doing, one new thing you'll try, or one thing you'd like to keep doing. And so, Danny, I know you're going to facilitate some questions. We can do both sort of reflections if folks want to share any of these in the chat, share additional resources, and then and questions as well.
And while they're thinking about that, Wendy, I was looking at the chat box and I saw that Ms. Blanders posted a suggestion, and it's a really important one. One of the things we've learned is during this pandemic time, it's not always the parent who is the caretaker who is there while the child is at school. And when you think about this, it isn't just the parent we need to reach out to, but whoever is that caregiver. As Ms. Finer said, it might be childcare, but it could be the neighbor, it could be abuela, it could be anybody. And those folks need to know how to monitor and use the technologies, other resources as well. So when we think about this, given this COVID environment, it's really important to consider all of the people who are in that caretaker role and to build their capacity.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks. Well, first of all, thank you so much for the great presentation. And our NASPs, our appreciation for this guide. We're really focused on, as an organization, really ensuring that members have helpful tools and resources during this really tough time, and this is certainly one that's helpful. So thank you for that. So I'll kick us off with questions, but please feel free to continue to throw questions or thoughts or reflections in the chat. My first one is, Wendy, you talked about this idea about this being an opportunity during this sort of this pandemic in the last 6 months, and this idea that, parents, have a new perspective just because of the fact that they had a front row seat to their kid's day every day. And what is that opportunity? What do we know about what parents think about their sort of their kids' learning? Has there been a shift? Like how can principals sort of capitalize on potentially that sort of new perspective?
I would say it's a great question. And I'll start, and Ron, feel free to, build on it. I would say a couple of things, a few things that haven't changed pre and post COVID. and I think it's really important to stress foundationally, is that parents want the best of for their kids. And we have seen consistently over the past 5 years, in fact, that parents have really high aspirations. They expect and want their kids to get at least a 2 or 4 year college degree. And in fact, there has been consistently a 10 point difference with African American and Latino families, really prioritizing education over their white peers. And I mention that because part of it is a mindset shift, right? And I think as educators, recognizing sometimes our own bias, our own, how we approach that, as Ron said, you know, key to building trust is believing in parents, right? Believing that they will show up if we meet them where they are, if we recognize all that they have on their plate pre, now, during, and post-COVID. So when I talk about opportunity, I think about it in the context of a couple of things. That parents have always had high aspirations. These are their babies. It's a very personal thing. For many of our families, it's the how. Right? Show me how. I am the expert of my child. I know what makes them tick. I get what motivates them. Show me how I can help them grow and be all that they can be by, as Ron said, giving me practical examples, not talking down to me as a parent, but rather meeting me as the expert of my child. And I think the last piece around the opportunity is that teachers also can't do this alone, right? Like the reality is that for many of our communities, you know, our kids, again, it's that a third of our children are at grade level, right? So there's always been an opportunity to improve how we are serving our children. And in this moment in time, it's, you know, about actualizing both parent and teacher roles, around a shared, you know, based on a shared understanding and moving toward a plan. Is what it comes down to from sort of, you know, the lens that we sit. And Ron, I know you work really closely with districts. I don't know if you would want to add anything.
Well, I think you mentioned it earlier in the presentation that the opportunity is that given all the fallout from this crazy COVID situation, we have families' attention more than we've ever had it before in terms of understanding the need to support their child's learning. They want to do it. They're there. A slide that is in your research that you didn't share says that families are keenly aware and appreciative of all that teachers do and all that teachers have to do for kids to be successful. So we've got their attention. Absolutely take advantage of it while we've got them. Say, all right, families, join us. Help us support your kids' success and take advantage of this the attention and enthusiasm they have right now.
Kind of during the school day and then at home, there that's your situation, a more of sort of a team approach. That makes a lot of sense. Dr. Franks, did you have a question for the panelists?
Yes. Something we've heard a lot from principals, certainly about their personal lives as well as their teachers and their students, is this social emotional issue during this time of pandemic. And I know this is a something that I'm going to actually post this in the chat box. Can you talk a little bit about the developing life skills communication roadmap that you mentioned in the guide to help break down social emotional life skills for parents? Because I do think that is an important topic in this these difficult and unusual times.
Yeah, couldn't agree more. And thank you for calling that out, Dr. Franks. So for all of us that are parents and certainly as educators, no surprise that over the past 5 years, again, in our research, another sort of note that we've been tracking is that for parents, while academics are very important, as I just shared, overwhelmingly their children's happiness, their social and emotional well-being is top priority. And parents talk about social emotional learning differently than we do as educators. They call them life skills. And what we found in this research is that there's also an opportunity in that parents inherently sort of get what the brain science has told us for many years, which is that social, emotional, cognitive, and academic skills are interconnected, right? Parents get that, like, if my child is feeling bullied, if they're not feeling connected to their teacher that year for whatever reason, if they are depressed, if they, for a whole host of reasons, if they're not going to learn their best, right? Again, it goes back to just sort of the how. So they get that it's critical. It's a priority for them. We often, I think we've come a very long way in education in integrating social emotional in the classroom. How do we communicate that and bring parents in? So what we've done with the roadmap that you called out is based on that research with parents, we've created a roadmap that breaks down education jargon in the social emotional space, in a way that is parent friendly. So really simple things like growth mindset, which is so critical. We are living in such an, I use growth mindset language with my daughter all the time, breaking it down for her. But parents have no idea what that means. Like literally in parents, like one dad in a focus group said, well, is it like when your brain is expanding, like gave this big long explanation. They're simply just, they're not educators, right? So breaking it down for them in simple language and explaining what it means, as Ron said, giving examples. So we have created a very simple roadmap, and then we also collaborated with the Commission for Social, Emotional, and Academic Learning, which a lot of that work is now out of America's Promise. You can find all of these resources from our website. They have also created a whole host of communication tools, some really great videos for educators, on sort of breaking down what life skills can look like in the classroom or even virtually, and then how you can translate that to parents. The last thing I'll just call out in that suite of resources is we also created a facilitator's guide that is meant to be used by school leaders, educators, or out-of-school time folks, as we were mentioning in the chat. You know, those learning supports are so critical. And it's a one-hour workshop that can be done as an hour workshop or be broken down into short activities, activities like that can be used at, you know, if you're doing coffee with a principal, for example. And what it does is help build that trust. So the first activity is inviting parents to share what are the life skills that matter to you in your culture, right? We have found nationally, interestingly, that across many cultures, respect is actually the top life skill that matters to parents. But when you unpack that, it means different things to different cultures. And so by engaging parents and hearing from them, it then opens the door to, as Ron said, even more conversations and more collaboration, not only around academics, but around the social emotional piece, which is so critical right now.
Thank you. That was great. We had Patty in the chat box say sharing that SEL vocabulary with community after school providers is important. Also, common language gets traction. So thanks for that, Patty. Continue to put your questions in the chat box. We had a few questions about this recording and the resources. Those will all be on our website. The link is in your website. In addition, if you registered for this webinar, you'll receive the recording of this as well as the slides. I had a question about coronavirus. There's been a lot of focus on kind of learning loss and especially the challenges for kids who were already behind with all this and just the challenges of, in instances where the district is going fully remote. How I imagine that a lot of it kind of is similar to what you said about communicating sort of student achievement with families, but anything around that you've seen or heard that schools and districts are doing? Yeah.
Yeah, really great question. And we have, as I mentioned, a lot of what we do is dig into language with parents. And what we have seen, because we've been in the field with parents in some one way or another, nationally or at the state level, since April, parents shut down when you talk about learning loss. They really don't want to hear it. Their mindset is that all schools shut down. We are all in this together. All kids had this experience. So why is my child lost? So we really encourage schools to not use, we use it as a field, and there's been lots of study, alarmingly showing the kind of learning loss that might happen because of this year. So we should all be mindful of it and working toward empowering families to help us mitigate it, but we don't need to use learning loss with parents. And I would encourage principals and leaders to talk about what we are doing. What are we doing as a school to support your child? And how can we ensure that we are going to continue on the path of growth? So, for example, one thing I wanted to mention is we were talking about showing visuals, right, in the tool of, you know, beginning of year benchmarks. One thing that we have seen in our research with parents to build that tool is that parents care about growth. What really resonates with them is like seeing, they want to see that uptick. Whether you're talking about their child or even school performance, how your school is doing, parents have great pride in their teachers, as you said, a great pride in their schools. They care about knowing what we're going to do and how are we going to continue making sure that that number, that line goes up. So yeah, I'm glad that you asked that because parents feel really strongly about, and Ron, I don't know if you've heard and seen similar.
Well, I think that what you said, Wendy, is spot on. And that's why it's critical not to talk about what I lost, but to really understand where is my child and what do we do about moving my child forward? So having that clear, complete picture of this is where my child is, this is where he should be or she should be, and here's what I can do to help make a difference. And I trust that you as the school will be doing things as well and together we'll have that success.
That's good advice. Great. Well, we've got time for probably one more question, maybe two quick ones. So principals in our principal guide, there's a lot of strategies. There's a lot of things that principals could be thinking about doing new or doing differently. What's your advice not to be overwhelming and sort of thinking about principals and their role and how they support staff? What are some just kind of either kind of easy, quick wins or things that they could sort of turnkey stuff that principals could do with their staff starting next week just to start to make headway on some of these things?
Yeah, so I'm happy to kick us off. And Ron mentioned this on one of our slides. We have, do less to do more. And I actually stole that line from Sal Khan from Khan Academy, who we work closely with, and he had a really great article, if you all haven't seen it, in the Washington Post a couple of weeks ago, and it was a call to action to parents, and his call to action was, this is a year where we need to do less in order to do more, and what he meant by that is, rather than feeling overwhelmed, which is what we know parents, they are overwhelmed in this moment, rightfully so, as teachers are, this is a year where it's actually an opportunity, right, to hone in on the foundational, those basics. And that's why, we created that tool, for example, to focus on, what are three main skills in reading and math that your child needs support on? Three main strategies and three resources to have in your back pocket as a parent, as opposed to feeling like we need to put everything on our website, the whole kitchen sink, 100 resource links. Focus on, what's really going to move the needle for our students. And I think teachers will also be grateful for that. As Ron was saying, that, whether it's platforms, the gift of time, staff meetings. And Ron, forgive me, I don't know if you mentioned this, but one suggestion we give is, consider instead of an hour staff meeting, 45 minutes, focus the agenda and then give teachers 15 minutes to do parent calls. Mm-hmm. But really making sure those 15 minutes aren't, chatting. That's great too. It's a bond with peers, but like focus on parent outreach. So that's what I would say is like, this is absolutely a time. We are all overwhelmed, but to really focus in on what's going to make the most strides, for both teachers and for families and ultimately in the service of students.
And my last piece of advice would be to involve parents in this discussion. So if you want something to do that's effective as building leaders, ask parents, is what you're doing working? Is it helpful? Get their input and help them let you know how to do less and what the most helpful, useful, important things are. Make sure you bring parent voice to the table in this conversation.
Yeah, that's really good advice. And that was a segue to what was gonna be my last sort of rapid fire question here before we close out, which is just any closing. I mean, we just talked about one sort of idea about less is more, but any sort of closing advice, any just sort of suggestions, or if you wanted to share an anecdote of school or district that you thought is doing something really fun and interesting, but just leave it for you two to share any sort of closing thoughts.
Yeah, I'll just start. I would say for me, foundationally, is believing in our parents. And the second is treating this moment of crisis as a moment of innovation. So what we have shared today are just a handful of ideas, but build off of them. So one idea that I heard from the school last week, which I love, and I'm mentioning because of the learning supports comment in the thread, is they have created a program where they are bringing non-instructional staff and matching them with students and they're calling them learning allies, and they are having 12-minute check-ins weekly with students to see how they're doing, not just on academics, but the social and emotional piece, right? Like, how are they doing with this virtual learning? And that also gives learning support staff, you know, an additional connection to classroom teachers. So I would say, you know, this is a moment of innovation, as hard as that is when we are, you know, putting out fires literally every day.
And I would say that if I could visit any one of your schools, I know that we would find staff who right now are doing an exemplary job of mm-hmm. building relationships with families, sharing performance data, teaching families what to do. So shine a light on those things. Highlight what's working in your building so that you can spread that activity and that impact because it's there, they're doing well. Bring attention to it and allow that to be something that inspires other teachers in the building to do well.
Yeah, that's good advice from both of you. So really appreciate that. And thanks again for, you know, today's presentation and for our sort of shared work on this guide. As I mentioned at the beginning, this recording and resources we'll be sharing all those. So if you registered for this webinar, you'll receive that. And I think the final thing on behalf of NAESP here is that you know, the work that our members are doing is so important, and in the work in leading schools. And we know that being a principal is so much more than just being the head of a school building, that it is all of those things. It's about engagement with parents and families, and not just engagement, but developing enduring relationships that it's, you know, for the benefit of students. And they're also principals are also leaders of the community. They're sort of beacons of hope. And this is a really, really tough time for everyone. But I think this sort of exercise and talking about these partnerships is really a microcosm of what we sort of need, which is getting through this together and sort of you know, the strength in these partnerships and what it means you know, for our kids is so needed. And so really appreciate it again. And if you this is Wendy's email here that she provided, so certainly feel free to reach out to her if you have questions, ideas, suggestions, reflections, and of course we here at NAESP are also available and would appreciate you reaching out to us as well. So thanks everyone for joining, and have a great day.